Thank you guys so much for being here. Let's get it started. We got our disclaimers. We wouldn't be attorneys if we didn't have disclaimers. So first up, your laws and your SOPs may be more restrictive. Understand, guys, you just saw we have officers from across the nation here. And so this is a national class. This is teaching to the federal standard. If you are in one of my more restrictive states, we're talking Washington, Oregon, New Mexico, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Alaska, Hawaii. Understand, you guys are more restrictive under your state standard. And so you have to know not only the law, the federal standard, you also have to know your more restrictive state standard, and you have to know your own individual policies. If you have any doubts, push it up the chain. Rely on the critical decision-making skills and leadership abilities of those in your chain of command. And finally, this course is legal education, not legal advice. I'm an attorney. I'm not your attorney. I'm not telling you what to do in any given situation. I'm telling you what the law says. We are here for confidential informants and search warrants. So let's talk about confidential informants. Courts know that informants are vital for investigations, but they must be managed properly. Yep, I want to convince the court that what I'm doing is reasonable and that I reasonably relied on the information provided to me by a CI. And so you have to convince the court of the reasonableness of your every action, including reliance on confidential informants. Hoffa versus United States. That's right, the Jimmy Hoffa. In this case, the government had a confidential informant who was in Hoffa's circle of friends. And Hoffa's defense attorneys, they argued, hold on a second, right? You had a government agent. That is a government agent. That is a person who is working at the direction of the government for the purpose of obtaining information to assist in prosecution. That's a government agent. And so introducing that person into Hoffa's circle of friends, into those interior private conversations, that is a Fourth Amendment issue. That is an intrusion on Hoffa's constitutional rights. And the United States Supreme Court disagreed. They said, listen, basically the takeaway is this. If you involve other people in your criminal machinations, if you involve other people in your criminal conspiracies, you assume the risk that one of them may be a government agent. No constitutional infringement if you willingly communicate information to others. And guess what? It turns out one of those people works for the government. Neither this court nor any member of it has ever expressed the view that the Fourth Amendment protects a wrongdoer's misplaced belief that a person to whom he voluntarily confides his wrongdoing will not reveal it. Yeah. The Hoffa opinion essentially held that citizens assume the risk their associates may be undercover agents. You were wrong to trust that guy. Nevertheless, no Fourth Amendment implication by what that government agent did when you voluntarily confided your criminal conspiracy in him. United States versus White. United States versus White. The informant was unavailable at trial. And so in this case, the government had a confidential informant who wore a wire. And he wore a wire when he was talking with White. White was involved in, you know, his criminal conspiracy. He made incriminating statements to the confidential informant. And that information was relayed back to the surveillance team. And when that information was used against White and they were moving toward trial, suddenly the informant was unavailable at trial. Yeah, he went missing. And then White argued, hold on a second, you can't use the electronic communications. You can't use that information against me because, yes, I understand that if I confide information in a CI or in a fellow associate, well, that's one thing, but this is more. I was confiding in a fellow associate who then conveyed that information to government agents, and you're now asking the government agents to testify to what I said? No. And the United States Supreme Court said, all good. We've got no problem with it. the CI could be testifying, but because he's unavailable at trial, next best thing was the information that was relayed via that electronic communication device, via that wire, to the government agents. They are going to be able to testify to what they heard during these communications. There is no constitutional implication here by what the government did. No warrant is required when the government sends to defendant's home a secret agent who, unbeknownst to the defendant, carries electronic equipment to record the defendant's words, and the evidence so gathered is later offered in evidence. We're seeing the baseline here, the groundwork for the value of confidential informants. An informant's reliability must be explained not simply based on conclusions, all right? You don't ever want to be conclusory. Affiants have received reliable information from a credible person and do believe that heroin, marijuana, barbiturates, and other narcotics and narcotic paraphernalia are being kept at the above-described premises for the purpose of sale and use, contrary to the provisions of the law. All right. What are we saying here? We're saying we receive reliable information from a credible person. Why is the information credible, right? Why is the information reliable? Why is the person credible? Because I say they are. No, that's not how it works. That's not how it works. These are mere conclusions that the CI was reliable. You have to tell me why. Although an affidavit may be based on hearsay information and need not reflect the direct personal observations of the affiant, the magistrate must be informed of some of the underlying circumstances from which the informant concluded that the narcotics were where he claimed they were, and some of the underlying circumstances from which the officer concluded that the informant, whose identity need not be disclosed, was credible, or his information was reliable. Give me something. Give me some basis. Don't just tell me the information's credible. Don't just tell me this person's reliable. No, you've got to tell me why. Articulate, articulate, articulate. An affidavit stated that an unvetted CI, right? Unvetted CI, personally observed the defendant having personal possession and control over a quantity of marijuana being held expressly for the purpose of unlawful distribution. When it comes to confidential informants, how does he know what he knows, and why should we believe him? Well, here, how does he know what he knows? He personally observed it. Awesome. That's fantastic. That's great. That firsthand observation. That's what I want. Having personal possession and control over a quantity of marijuana being held expressly for the purpose of unlawful distribution. Distribution charges. Is that different? Is that more? Is that an aggravating factor? Absolutely. So why does he believe that this marijuana is being held for distribution? Is it merely the amount? Well, maybe this is Snoop Dogg and Willie Nelson's tour, right? Maybe they're going on tour together, and that's just, you know, that's just the afternoon delight. Is it because it's packaged in a certain way? Is it communications that he heard? I have no doubt that this officer has a basis for concluding that this marijuana is being held for distribution. I have no doubt. But here's the thing, guys. A judge is not going to take your word for it. They're not going to give you the benefit of the doubt. They're not just going to assume that you are trustworthy or that your information is accurate. You have to tell them why. The distribution statement was conclusory, and no specific information was provided as to why the CI should be trusted. The detective presents no underlying factual circumstances to support the informant's knowledge regarding distribution, nor the detective's own belief that these quantities of marijuana were present for the purpose or with the intention of unlawful possession, sale, or transportation, or even that marijuana would be on the premises when the warrant was executed. All right, State versus Novembrino. I want you guys to think about this, okay? As we walk through this affidavit, I want you to look at this and I want you to ask yourself, have I seen search warrant affidavits that are worse than this? Have I seen better? Have I seen worse? Have I seen affidavits that include less information than this and have been approved by a judge? All right? All right. Maybe I've written affidavits with less information than this. Consider. I received information from an informant who has proven reliable in several investigations with the information he supplied. I'm trying to make the argument this is a vetted CI, right? This is a reliable confidential informant, okay? That Otto, above description, is engaged in the illegal sales of cocaine and marijuana. My informant stated that Otto usually keeps the drugs in his gas station at the above location. All right. He, informant, also stated that he witnessed Otto dealing drugs from his gas station. So again, why is he reliable and how does he know what he knows? He's reliable because he's proven himself with several investigations. And how does he know what he knows? First-hand observations. Okay. Okay, we're doing all right. Also stated that he witnessed Otto dealing drugs from his gas station. I, along with Detective Higgins, conducted a surveillance of the subject and his station on Thursday between the hours of 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. and observed Otto meeting with several persons after leaving his station and making what we believed to be drug transactions. All right, so what is the detective doing here now? He's taking this information provided by what he believes is a reliable informant, and he is corroborating that information. He's going out, and they're doing surveillance, and he is corroborating, confirming some of the information provided to him by the CI. All right? During the surveillance, we observed one person making a transaction with Otto and checked on his vehicle and called the narcotics squad to inquire on his relationship with drugs. They told us that said person has been arrested for cocaine and other violations, and they felt that Otto and the other person are involved in drug activity. Okay, so I got the CI. I go out, I make my own personal observations. I do my own surveillance, and I corroborate, I confirm the information provided by the CI. Then what do? One of the people who's involved in what I believe to be a drug transaction, I document that license plate. I conduct a records check on them. They've got a history of narcotics violations. Okay? So criminal history. Is that relevant in identifying reasonable suspicion and relevant in identifying probable cause? Absolutely. Absolutely. Is that criminal history going to be admissible at trial in the main part of the trial? Probably not. Because why? Chances are your jury will use that for an improper purpose, right? They will conclude not that he is guilty because of the facts presented, but because he's done similar things in the past. And so a defense attorney will likely be able to argue, no, right? No, the probative value is far outweighed by the prejudicial effect. Having said that, although the jury may not be able to hear about it in the case in chief, can you rely on it in identifying reasonable suspicion? Can you rely on it in identifying probable cause? The absolute answer is yes. And so articulate that, okay? All right. So then we call a specialty squad. We call that specialty unit that specializes in narcotics. And we call them and we explain what we're seeing. And guess what? That specialty unit that specializes in narcotics, they agree with us. They say, yeah, it sounds like what you're seeing is narcotics transactions. All right. Good. Good. From the information received from our informant and from our observations, we do feel that a search of Otto's gas station should be conducted for illegal contraband. We checked on ownership of the station, and it belongs to Otto, who we have presently in headquarters on this investigation. Otto was advised of his rights and refused a search of his station, but appeared to be very nervous. Okay? Now, like I said, right? It's not great. You know, But hey, are these officers doing their due diligence? Is this detective doing his due diligence? Is he following up? Is he doing something? I want you guys to think about some of the search warrant affidavits you've seen before that have been approved by a judge, some of the PC statements, maybe some of the ones that you've written yourself. How does this compare to those? I tell you, one time, I saw a search warrant affidavit, and the PC statement was, "We have probable cause to believe there is evidence of the crime of possession of narcotics at the above listed location." That's the probable cause statement. What is my probable cause statement? We have probable cause. Boom. What more do you need? Am I right? Yeah. And guess what? Judge signed off on that one. Woo, mama. I don't want to be the prosecutor who's arguing that case, right? All right. So think about that. What do you guys think? Seem pretty good? Not too bad, right? Not too bad. And then you think about it, right? Now, Tim, your judge is doing the right thing, okay? But Kevin saw it, right? Kevin saw it. The affidavit is utterly devoid of specific facts witnessed by the officers from which the judge could have independently concluded that their suspicions were reasonable. The affidavit does not state with particularity what the officers observed or why the officers believed that drugs were being sold. It does not inform the judge in what respect the transactions observed by the officers differed from routine service station transactions, right? And so I love that because I look at this case, right? And I'm like, yeah, that's not bad. And then you read that and you say, man, I guess the judge is right, right? It's like the officers were conclusory in everything. We observe transactions that we believe to be drug transactions. What about the transactions led them to that conclusion? I called this specialty unit and I explained to them what we were observing and they agreed. Yeah, sounds like drug transactions. I told that specialty unit what I was observing. Well, tell me. Don't keep it a secret, right? Don't keep it a secret. Share your secrets with me, with the trier of fact, so that I can agree, were you reasonable or were you not? You've got to tell me why. You've got to articulate. And I tell you guys, this is a great example of the point that we always make in our advanced search warrants class, in our bulletproof report writing class. I have read thousands of cases where I read the opinion and I say, I understand why the officer did what he did. I have no doubt that this officer had probable cause. I have no doubt that this detective was doing the reasonable thing, right? The problem is there's insufficient articulation. You're seeing things. The driver was nervous. They were unusual, right? Okay, can you brief a judge verbally and then state in your PC that you briefed the judge about your specific facts? Now, Jim, this is going to be state specific, but on average, the answer is yes, as long as you are making sworn statements, right? But you've got to be careful with that. You've got to be careful with that because it has to be sworn. It has to be sworn before a judge. And so the judge can say, yeah, I mean, in my chambers, we talked about this, right? But you want to avoid that. Right? Because I want my PC statement. I want my affidavit. I want a subsequent reviewing court to be able to conclude that based on what I presented to the judge was reasonable. It was reasonable. They had arguable probable cause. And then I reasonably relied on a warrant that was facially valid. Because if your affidavit says, I went in and told the judge and the judge agreed that there was PC, can you argue that you're going to rely on that affidavit in good faith? You know, I don't think you can, right? I don't think you can. That's a tough sell. Okay. Yeah. All right. So hand-to-hand transactions. Yeah. Aren't you always assuming based on other things? Okay. To a certain degree, Raymond, but let me ask you, man, right? Let me ask you, in this situation, in Novembrino, What about those interactions led them to the conclusion that they were narcotic sales, right? So the way I describe this is a subject walks up to a suspected drug dealer, right? They're looking left. They're looking around as if looking for law enforcement. One reached out and quickly they handed a small object in exchange for what appeared to be U.S. currency. What is the possible, right? What is the reasonable conclusion from that observation? The only reasonable conclusion from that observation is that that was a narcotics sale. Nobody sells anything else like that, right? Come on. Come on. When have you ever gone to a service station and done something like that, right? You're not walking in and being like, hey, Rolos, right? Give me the Rolos, and then I hand you exact change, and I turn around, and we're moving. We're moving, right? Yeah, come on now. Come on. That's a hand-to-hand. That's a drug deal, right? Now, I mean, Casey, we're talking black market Pokemon 100%, bro. 100%. Those things are going, what, 100, 200 bucks for some of those cards? It's not a game. It's not a game. People are dying now as a result of that. Oh, Josh is coming out with some Yu-Gi-Oh. Next time he's going to be talking about Pogs up in here. Slammers. No. Let's get back on task. All right. So you look at that, right? Now, I tell you, I have no doubt that this officer is observing things that lead him to that conclusion. But the judge is not going to take your word for it. You've got to tell me why. Because don't ever be conclusory. The most powerful word in report writing is because. State your opinion and then say, because. Tell me why. As I spoke with the subject, I observed obvious injuries to his face and a bleeding laceration on his left thumb. What was obvious about it, right? No. Tell me why. Let's rewrite that. As I spoke with the subject, I observed injuries. His left eye had burst blood vessels. His upper lip was inflamed. His left thumb had a bleeding laceration approximately 2 inches in length, right? Tell me why. The suspect was non-compliant. How many of you have read this report? The suspect was non-compliant. And so I took hold of him in a department-approved control hold and assisted him to the ground. Who's read that report? Who has written that report? What does that mean? What does that mean, right? Yeah, that means nothing. Tell me what you saw. Don't be conclusory. Tell me, is this guy non-compliant?
Put the bottle down.
No.
Yeah, put it down.
No.
Put the bottle down.
No, because then this guy do. You can't tell me I'm arresting, right?
No, man, I just want to talk to you. The additional unit supervisor.
Yeah, right. What's the real blunt?
Hey, man, just put the bottle
What's
down.
What's a real blunt?
We're just trying to make sure
What?
You're all right.
What? A real blunt.
What?
What's a real blunt?
What are you talking about? Put down the bottle. Put down the lock.
What's a real blunt?
Put down the bottle.
No.
Put down the lock.
No.
What are you doing?
Until you talk to me like a real man. What's a real blunt?
What's a real what?
A real blunt.
Real blunt?
Yeah.
Like a marijuana blunt?
A real blunt.
What's your question?
What's a real blunt?
I don't know, man.
You have to explain it.
Hey, go inside, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, put the bottle down. Put the bottle down. I'll tase you.
Do not fall.
Put the bottle down.
Tase me?
I will.
You think that hurts?
Put the bottle down. Put it down.
Put the taser down.
Put the bottle down.
No.
Telling you. Put it down.
What's a real blunt, dude?
Put the bottle down.
What's a real blunt?
Hey, you might want to get a backup for this guy.
What's a real blunt?
Put the bottle down.
What's a real blunt?
I don't know, man. Put the bottle down so I can talk to you.
So it's not real?
Put it down so I can talk to you.
So it's not there.
Put the bottle down.
1999 is fake.
Put the bottle down so I can talk to you.
1999 is fake.
Okay.
Is the subject non-compliant? Yes, he is. Now, let me ask you guys. I got two questions for you. First off, what's a real blunt? Okay. And second question, was 1999 fire? Yes or no? Right. Doug says 1999 was fire. Yes. Don't tell me how many of you were not alive in 1999, because that's just going to make me feel old. I'm going to get my walker and roll out of here. Yeah. Get out of here. The suspect was non-compliant because he said, "I'm not going to jail." He ignored commands. He acted contrary to commands. He walked away. Repetitive phrases, illogical responses, right? How many of you guys saw when the officer got out of the vehicle? What was the first thing this guy said to him? "Yeah, you going to kill me today, right?" Whoa, mama. That is a bad way to start this interaction, right? That is a bad way to start this interaction. The stop was made in a high crime area. No, don't just tell me it was a high crime area, right? Don't just tell me it was a high crime area. I tell you, I don't know. I blame interdiction training for this, right? I blame interdiction training for this. Speaking of which, if you guys get a chance, take our advanced interdiction case law class. It is an awesome class talking about proactive policing, talking about the tools necessary for interdiction. All right. Advanced interdiction case law. Check it out. But here's the thing, it's not enough just to tell me it's a high crime area. I think that we're having training out there where people are like, instructors, they're like, "Listen, courts like it when you say this. Courts like it when they say it's a high crime area." So just kind of sprinkle that in there, right? Just kind of sprinkle that in there. Just like a little bit of spice in the bouillabaisse that is your report. He was nervous, right? It was a high crime area. It appeared to be just like indications of deception, right? Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. So don't just tell me it's a high crime area. If you're going to tell me it's a high crime area, you have to articulate why you believe that. What we're talking about here, right? And I'll tell you why this is important, because the Ninth Circuit has explained that the citing of an area as high crime requires careful examination by the court, because such description, unless properly limited and factually based, can easily serve as a proxy for race or ethnicity. Yeah. Yeah. So, what is the Ninth Circuit saying here? If an officer refers to an area as a high crime area, you've got to be careful of that. And you should be suspect, right? You should analyze this closely, because why? Too often, law enforcement officers are using the expression high crime area as a proxy for race or ethnicity. Don't ever allow a judge to assign their own racial bias to your actions because you failed to effectively articulate. Articulate, articulate, articulate. Tell me why. This is a high crime area, right? The area where I stopped the suspect was dangerous because number of arrests, type of arrests, personal observations, statistics, citizen complaints. Tell me why you are concluding this is a high crime area and why the court should agree with you. I observed a car being driven recklessly in the right travel lane. Reckless. What does that mean? Is that conclusory? Yeah, we're being conclusory again. Don't tell me that. Tell me what you're, that's conscious disregard of a known risk. That's what reckless means. No. Look at it. What specific facts and circumstances are you seeing that leads you to this conclusion such that I can agree with you as that independent, unbiased trier of fact? What do you guys think? Driven recklessly? Yes, right? The vehicle was being driven recklessly. Because I observed the vehicle rapidly swerve from the number two to the number one travel lane in one motion without using a turn signal, I estimated the vehicle to be traveling at approximately 90 miles per hour. That's Dukes of Hazzard style right there, right? And Amanda's stopping and giving that guy a parking ticket and then heading on, right? We got places to be. Yep. The victim was hysterical. The victim was hysterical because she kept waving her arms around, kept telling me that she wanted to straight up murder the suspect for beating her, and was constantly crying. Look at that. I agree. We can say yes. Hysterical. But only because you told me what you were actually observing. Original. The wife appeared scared of her husband. Again, conclusory. Don't be conclusory. Tell me why. Rewrite. The wife appeared to be scared of her husband because she kept asking when he would be released from jail, asked if there were battered woman shelters in the area, and asked whether he would be told she accused him of spousal battery. Okay, I agree. Now I can agree with you that, yep, she seems to be scared. But you got to tell me why. Don't ever be conclusory. Original. I searched the vehicle for weapons for officer safety. Yes, right? The old officer safety recognized exception to the warrant requirement. Sorry, guys. There is no such thing as the officer safety exception to the warrant requirement. No, it doesn't exist. If you are going to conduct a protective sweep or a frisk through that vehicle, you need to be able to articulate specific facts more than a mere inchoate and unrecognized hunch to believe that an occupant of that vehicle is armed and dangerous, right? Michigan versus Long tells us, if you want to get in that vehicle and you want to sweep it for weapons, you have to tell me why. And it's not enough just to say officer safety. So let's rewrite that. I believed the driver was armed and dangerous because the driver was extremely slow to stop. He immediately challenged my authority to make the stop. He closely watched my actions upon approach. He constantly pleaded to be let go with a warning. He had a nervous tone in his voice. He was convicted of robbery in 2019. Is this enough? Maybe, maybe not. It's a moderate chance of criminal activity, right? It's a moderate chance that there's a firearm in that vehicle. So not a high standard. It is a low standard, but it is a standard nonetheless. And I tell you right now, this may not be enough, but this is certainly far more likely to succeed than for officer safety. I did it for officer safety reasons. Whenever I pull somebody out of a car, I frisk them for officer safety. No, 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 no. You need reasonable suspicion to believe that an occupant is armed and dangerous, if you are going to be frisking, if you are going to be doing that protective sweep inside that vehicle. Original, case involving a prostitute. I escorted Teresa down to the security room and interviewed her. Immediately apparent to me was her level of intoxication, and the smear of lipstick on her face suggested that she had very recently engaged in some form of oral copulation. Based on my experience. So if you're the reviewing supervisor, how do we rewrite this one? We don't, right? That report is perfect. Leave it alone, right? There you go. Leave it alone. Yep. That report is perfect. And then when you show up at trial and your sergeant is there, right, in the gallery to watch the proceedings, and you're like, hey, Sarge, what are you doing here? And you're like, oh, nothing. Just want to watch you testify today. Cold-blooded. Cold-blooded. All right, guys, if you want more blue to gold content, please scan this QR code, right? Scan this QR code. take advantage of our social media. We put out a whole lot of free content, valuable content, and you can't beat the price. What are the two factors you should articulate when including a CI in a search warrant? What do you guys think? What are they? A CI and a search warrant? How they know what they know? Why you should believe them. Beautiful. All right? Explain why he's reliable. Explain how he knows what he knows. Why should I believe him? And how does he know what he knows? So how do we articulate an informant's past reliability? Well, past performance, especially convictions. We have obtained X number of narcotics, right? X number of dollars, X number of convictions, X number of hour, you know, man years of prison sentence, right? Declaration against interest. The informant came in and said, hey, listen, I was involved in this criminal conspiracy. I was doing all this. I was doing this. I was there for the robbery. I was there for the stealing the car. I was there. But I wasn't there for the murder. And I know you guys are going to jam me up for the robbery, for stealing this other stuff. I understand that. I don't have a problem with that because I need everybody to know I wasn't there for the murder. There you go, right? A disinterested citizen. I've got no dog in the fight. I'm not in the life. I'm not in the game. I am just a normal, everyday, average citizen. You should trust me. Or the undercover officer. There you go, right? The undercover officer. And so an officer who is working in an undercover capacity and is gaining this information first or second hand. CI gave an officer accurate information 15 to 16 times before. Are we going to treat this guy as a confidential, reliable informant? He's got a history, right? He's got a history. Rock and roll. There was no doubt as to the informant's reliability. How do you keep track of your informant's reliability? The officer's testimony was inconsistent and uncertain. It demonstrated a woeful lack of proof, not only as to the alleged informant's reliability, but even as to his existence. That is not the way to do it. There you go. Document, document, document. Documentation is key. Create your CI folders and make sure there's restricted access to those. Not good. The CI told the officer when and where a drug transaction would take place. The officer observed the transaction, but made no arrest. Okay? So are we going to establish a course of conduct here? Are we going to say he said this would happen, he anticipated this happening, and then this happened? If A, B, C, and D are true, chances are E is true as well. Seeing the drug transaction helped prove the CI's reliability. Corroborate. What if the CI told the officer there would be drugs at a party, and the officer saw the party, but no drugs? Well, if there's no drugs, is it really a party? Now, can we have parties without drugs, right? Oh, man, it's not a Diddy party, Amanda. Not a Diddy party, okay? Diddy is not there. This would contribute practically nothing to reliability, right? Because people can have a party without drugs. If I say, hey, there's gonna be a party here, and then I'm like, oh man, right, there's gonna be drugs, means nothing. Means nothing. Okay? So how do we articulate an informant's basis of knowledge? Well, firsthand observations are good, right? He was there, he was present, he was talking with the other people, right? He saw this happen. I want that firsthand observation, or we need to corroborate that information. We need to corroborate that information. The key to a corroboration is to explain why the observed conduct proves The informant had inside information. This is not just information that any casual observer could relay. This is not just something that a uninvolved, independent, third party could tell you. Instead, what we are doing is we are saying this person is providing information that indicates they have inside knowledge. They are intimately associated with this event. They are intimately associated with the people involved in this incident. And so we should rely on them. Draper versus U.S., United States Supreme Court decision. And I will tell you guys, Draper is one of those cases that kind of sets the standard. It sets the precedent for similar cases in the future. Tell me, do you guys think this is sufficiently reliable? A confidential, reliable informant told an officer that the suspect would return from Chicago on Monday or Tuesday, provided a physical description, described what he would be wearing, that he would be holding a tan zipper bag, and habitually walked fast. On Monday, we go there, we see a train arriving from Chicago. A subject matching that physical description exits the train. He is wearing, right, a suit as described by the CRI. He is holding a tan zippered bag. And yes, indeed, he is walking fast off the train. Did we have an anticipatory, prediction, right? We predicted that this was going to happen. Does that show inside information? Absolutely. This person is intimately associated with this person, with these events. Because why? I can predict the future. And I tell you, on this date, at this time, this, and then there's drugs inside that zippered bag. Law enforcement goes out on the date, at the time. Suspect description matches. He is wearing what we said he was going to be wearing. He is carrying that zippered bag. If A, B, and C, and D are true, chances are E is true as well. Is there a fair probability that there are narcotics inside that bag? Facts and circumstances that would warrant a man of reasonable caution in his belief that the facts are as they think they are? Rock and roll. Plus, we've got a CRI. Love it. The CI plus the corroboration equaled probable cause. All right, guys, here's your takeaways. All conclusions need to be proven, right? Conclusions, don't be conclusory. Tell me why. Articulate why the conclusions that you reached were reasonable and why I, as an independent trier of fact, be it a judge or a jury, should agree with you. Articulate the reliability of your informants. Who are they, right? And why should we believe them? And then tell me how they know what they know. First-hand observation, intimately involved with the situation. This, Your Honor, is why you should believe them. This is why I believe them, and this is why you should as well. Did you guys find this information useful? I sure hope so. I sure hope you took something from it. If you guys want more Blue to Gold content, please scan this QR code, right? Sign up for our social media. Check and see if we are coming to an area near you. I would very much appreciate it, guys, if you give me some feedback, right? Scan this QR code. Give me a review as an instructor. I always want to grow. I always want to learn. And I never want to stop improving my game. Give us a review on this class. If you guys want to help us, you want to help us spread the good word and get this information out to other law enforcement officers. Nothing helps us do that more than letting us use your reviews. Good, bad, or indifferent, I want to use your review. We won't use your agency. We won't use your name if you don't want us to. But everybody knows that if you are going to go on Amazon and you're going to buy something, if something's got 30 reviews or something's got 3,000 reviews, I feel much more confident buying that thing with 3,000 reviews. So help us out. Help us fight the good fight. Help us get this valuable life or career-saving information out to other law enforcement. All right, if you guys are interested in hosting Blue to Gold, please go to bluetogold.com, check out our catalog. Any classes that are coming near you, or if they are not and you want us to come to your agency, contact Aaron Martin. There is the email, training@bluetogold.com. There is the phone number. We would love to come out to your agency. We can train your entire agency on any one of our classes. Whether you have 15 officers or 5,000, we can come out and train your entire agency on any one of our courses. And nothing is going to help reduce liability for your agency like getting everybody on the same correct page.